strength and be able to make the change happen? How do we help them build leadership? How do we help to build communication skills so that they're credible? How do we make sure that we're addressing issues of culture that's going to be reflective of the community that we're working with? And, you know, many of us are familiar with CBPR, community-based participatory research, but I think that we've got to find creative new ways to make that happen. It can't just be putting a traditional model on this new way in which we're trying to do our work. So the key is how we're challenging ourselves to make sure that what we're doing is fresh and different and reflective of the times that we're in. So some other principles include making sure that we engage people early and that it's substantive, that it's not just come to a big town hall meeting and we want to get your impact and we're going to give you a bus token and childcare and food. It's more about how do you begin to challenge getting them involved in governance level involvement. How do you make sure that they have a role, that people who are very busy with their lives don't often have a culture of coming to meetings in the same way that we do. So how do you make sure that their engagement is going to be a win-win for them, and not just as a requirement of your grant that you've got to have community engagement. And again, the community feedback mechanisms are really important. How do you make sure that there's a constant flow, that you might need to change something? I mean, I know that I've certainly been told that getting those communities involved takes time, you slow the process down. And so the key is that you build the time now or you lose your effect later. So the key is trying to figure out how to make sure that you can create opportunities for success and win-win and how to translate this into action. One of the other lessons that we've learned is that it's really important to figure out how to align what you're trying to do with the community's needs. And I saw this happen particularly when I was working at the Public Health Department in Alameda County. I was there for 10 years and we had just created a new division of community health services. We wanted to take the organization into the communities. And so we were asking the community, what do you really want? Now, we hope that they're going to be saying the things that we want to put in place. But often they wanted some simple things. Give me some lighting. Give me speed bumps. Give me something that's going to make me feel safer in my community. And what we found is that if you can do those small things for the community, then you tend to have them as partners with you for the bigger things. But you can't go in there with your agenda, trying to drive your agenda. It's got to be some way that they're going to be aligned with what their needs are. Now, this other piece about unlikely partnerships, I think this is the piece I wanted to stop a moment and really talk about, because we have to do things differently, that the world is changing. Demographically, the world is changing. We've got to make sure that we know who these people are that are coming into the community, that we're reflecting what their needs are. And so how do you create some unlikely partners for people who are normally not at the table, not only in terms of maybe new immigrants who are coming into your community, but also it could be new businesses coming into your community. How do you make a business case for what you're trying to do and how it impacts that business? In policy, we've been doing some creative partnerships with foundations. We heard over lunch from Michelle about the Convergence Partnership. Well, that's really one of the most creative partnerships that we've been involved with at policy, even though it's not at a community based level, it's a way in which foundations are working together that they didn't do before. Because often foundations want to take, they want to get some credit for what they're putting their investments in. And so with this Convergence Partnership, you have a group of foundations coming together and pooling their resources. And it's not just one foundation, it is about the collective that we're all going to be winners in this together. We also have seen some really wonderful creative partnerships with our work with the California Endowment, where they made a requirement that in order to get a particular pot of money, public health departments had to work with community organizations. And so they got their own direct funding. The money didn't have to go through the public health foundation, public health organizations. So that was a creative way to make sure that the communities really got the resources and that they had a direct role and responsibility to making this stuff work. So we want to use those kind of models. Another thing that we want to focus on is the use of communication skills. That, we have to figure out how to speak a new language. And so, we're so used to sometimes speaking in our acronyms and using terms that really tend to create more distance. And so how do we make sure that the language that we're using is really important, and especially when we're trying to do this place-based work. Even that terminology can be really off-putting. What does this mean, place-based work? It means that we have to figure out how to use the kind of language that's not going to create an exclusion, that we have to find ways to make this happen. And there are really organizations who are founded to do this kind of work. So we've been working with groups like the Framing Institute. There are other groups, the Berkeley Media Studies Centers, where they really work with organizations to figure out how to use language that's going to create more of an inclusive process so that people will stop focusing, for example, on the individual impact. So, for example, the piece about childhood obesity, we're also working with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on their Center to Prevent Childhood Obesity, and communications is a big piece of this, so that we could talk about how this shift in this culture that we've created has created the obesity crisis to some degree, as opposed to looking at the individual. Why don't that individual just stop eating all that bad food? Why is that one way that child just sit on the couch and, you know, and not be outside and be physically active? But if you understand, as was mentioned earlier, that sometimes the community are not necessarily the safest place for kids to go out there and play, and you can understand why the parents don't want them out there. And so how that shift has occurred in our society, our relationship with food has really changed over the years. Whereas, you know, years ago, you got food at the grocery store, you got food maybe at the mom and pop store. I'd get food at the gas station, you get food at, you know, at the laundromat, you get food almost every place. And so that wasn't an individual decision, that was a way in which our culture has changed. And so we've got to take a look at how all of those factors really impact the culture that we're now existing in. The other thing that we've been doing more at Policy is really understanding how to have in-depth conversations about race, culture, and class. And this is a way that you can begin to take a look at how communities that you're working with need to feel valued, that there's a sense of appreciation that you're trying to at least meet what their needs are. And I'll just stop and give an example of something that just happened in the last couple of weeks, where we took our TA team to Atlanta to do a TA training with the State of Georgia CPPW grantees, and they wanted us to do a segment of unnatural causes. And so I chose the session number 2, which was around when the bowel breaks, basically showing the high rates of poor birth outcomes for African-American women compared to white women. And so the intent was to talk about infant mortality in this session. But what happened when they saw that segment, which was very compelling and moving, we had to put our agenda to the side because they were really focused on this piece about race. How could this happen in our culture? How could, you know, so I think taking the time to really stop and talk about how issues of race and culture has impacted health. Now, there was one woman who was from a rural area in the South, a white woman who was saying that she was really so moved because she always had 9-pound babies. And she thought anybody who had low birth weight babies was because something that they did wrong and didn't do. And so she felt it was really a way of opening up her eyes. Another woman mentioned in the film, the researchers asked, how many white women think about race, their race on a regular basis? And it was very, very limited, maybe once a week, once a month. When they asked black women, it was almost every day, several times a day. And so just hearing the ways in which people experience the world was very important for us to see how difference makes, you know, how it matters in your life. And so we were trying to move from not just tolerating difference, but how to value difference. So taking the time to really spend when you need to around race and culture is important. And clearly we need to talk about monitoring and evaluating the impact of this work. You know, has anything changed as a result of community engagement? Has your program been strengthened in some ways? One of the things that I can also say is that we have been working around some of the unintended consequences of not addressing issues of race and culture. An example is a store that was a new store brought into an area of Oakland that really was a food desert. But what happened is that the store, the products that they're selling, they're all organic and they're very healthy and there's a lot of fruit and vegetables. A lot of the residents are not going to that store, but because they weren't necessarily they weren't asked about what kind of store, what kind of products they wanted to have in place. And so we're using that for the work that we're doing. There's a project that we're working with called Fresh and Easy Stores coming into many communities. And so we're the researchers working with other partners with that. So we did focus groups early on to figure out, okay, what kind of products do you want? Because we, and we're also going to be doing some pre and post testing to see if this new store is going to change eating habits and purchasing habits. So we got to figure out how to make sure that it's a combination of what we think is best for people and what they want to have in their lives. And so clearly the goal of all of this is having shared leadership. And so, again, here are some examples of the work that we're doing to demonstrate this community engagement and its value. The health impact assessment, what we just have been hearing about. We have a team that's been working in the Twin Cities in Minnesota about a new rail line that's going in, where they've been able to really work with this group called the Isaiah Group in this area, and really, which is a faith-based organization, and really helping to determine where the rail line is going to stop. It's not going to bypass their communities. And so that's one example of understanding what are the health consequences of these new things coming into the communities. We've been working with this community equity initiative in the area of California that's called the Central Valley. This is the area that grows most of the nation's food. And so, but in that area where the farm workers and the immigrants who are sometimes working there, they have very poor infrastructure. Some of the communities look like it's in a third world country. They're called a colonious kind of area. And so we've been working with that group to have fresh water, because they don't even have fresh running water and great sanitation. So you'd be surprised if you saw this rich, it used to be a rich state of California. We've been a little bit broke recently. But to see that these people who are picking this food can't even afford to buy the food, and they don't have health care. So we're trying to do some work to really improve those conditions in that Central Valley. We've been working with Richmond, California, having health as an element in their general plan. And for a couple of years, I'm trying to help them figure out how to make this happen. We've all heard about the photovoltaic projects. These are ones that I'm really proud of because it involves youth. And there is one group in Los Angeles through our TCE, Health and Eating Active Communities grants, where they created a video called Where's My Five a Day? So we gave kids these little cameras, little throwaway cameras, to take pictures of what's in their community in terms of getting five servings of vegetables and foods a day, when that was supposed to be the standard at that time. It's changing constantly now. Then they went to other communities where you saw proliferation of, you know, the Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and farmers markets. And so they used that as a tool to go to city council and say, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be healthy. How is the community not supporting my need to be healthy? And as a result of that, they were not able to get farmers markets in these areas of South Central Los Angeles. So you can see some direct relationships between having an engaged, especially an engaged youth, who are so, you know, full of justice. If you get them on your side, you can really begin to not only make change happen, but they can begin to influence their parents' choices about foods and eating habits. The last thing I'm going to mention to you, my time is almost winding up, is that I brought copies of policy. We publish a lot of reports. I did bring about 50 copies of this latest one, which is on why place and race matters. Inside here, there are numerous examples that involve what I've been talking about, having community involved, how communities are changing, how we're beginning to change policy as a result of some of the things happening across the country. And the last thing that I brought is a copy of what we just created, a community engagement resource guide. It's a little checklist to help you see how you're beginning to engage communities and help you to see some principles that you can check off to see if you're on the right track in making that thing happen. So I thank you so much for your participation and look forward to conversation.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could first comment on the evaluation of some of your community interventions, like the freshman movement.
Yes, well, we have researchers both at our office and also Samuels and Associates. Sarah Samuels in the Bay Area is one of the leading researchers around this issue of place-based work, and they're partners with us. So there are clear evaluation methodologies that we're using and indicators. But I also want to mention people who are not familiar with Rajiv Bhatia's work in San Francisco. Public Health Department has created also a set of indicators to measure this place-based work, because again, you can't use your traditional evaluation measures to this new set of principles around place-based strategies. So there are some encouraging evaluation strategies that are underway.
Are there any other questions? Okay.
Thank you. I'm Alder Tillman from Montgomery County, Maryland, County Health Officer. I was fascinated by your presentation, and I'm pleased with the great work you've done. A challenge that I've seen over the years of my career is how to get such programs started and sustained with funding, because many times our funding streams aren't going there. And I would love to hear from you how you got it going and sustained.
Well, you know, interestingly, policily, I'd say like 95% of our funding is from foundations. And in our experience, foundations are interested in this piece. So it hasn't necessarily been a struggle getting foundations to agree that there should be community engagement. I think one of the challenges has been getting the sustained funding over a period of time, because you can't do community engagement work well with a two-year grant. One of the things that we really valued with the California Endowment is that that's been a 10-year initiative, and they still have a new iteration called Building Healthy Communities that was really built on, you know, things that started 10 years ago. So I think having the commitment and the resources to go the mile that it requires is what I see as one of the bigger challenges.
Please join me in thanking our speakers again.